Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight!
Well, there goes the Daverhood! Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome to the 210th episode of Dave's Gone By. On this Sunday, March 4th, 2007. Happy to be here. Happy to do this program as I've been doing it on this station since October of 2002. That's how we were able to put in 210 of these babies over the past few years. And this particular episode, which is already feeling really weird and bizarre, because if you were listening in the last hour in what I call the Little Big Time, the pre-show for this program, our guest is circling around every other part of Long Island but where he's supposed to be. He's Richard Skipper, and Richard is best known as a Carol Channing impersonator. Now, why are we having a Carol Channing impersonator on the air, especially since this is radio and not television, and you can't physically actually see him, so you have to imagine the wig and the makeup and the lipstick and whatever else? Well, it is Purim. So happy Purim, everybody. And Purim is, of course, the Jewish holiday that is, well, I hesitate to call it the Jewish Halloween. That's not really right or fair, because Halloween is this weird, dark, paganistic holiday. And Purim stems out of this happy occasion in the Jewish calendar where we thwarted, love that, that's a word I don't get to use very often, we thwarted an evil fella who was going to destroy the Jewish people. But thanks to Esther and her uncle Mordecai and all the machinations that they did, they ended up killing him instead of the whole Jewish population. I mean, you know, I don't know where they were in 1944, but at least thousands of years ago, we had them, and we were able to do away with. Now, let me see if I found, oh yes, I was crinkling my can. If you were listening early in the previous hour, I couldn't find a good noise to drown out the name of the evil fella, the evil Persian who was going to kill all the Jews. So I went around. I wasn't going to use the comedy bell, because that is sacred. The comedy bell is the bell that we ring on Dave's Gone By for an extraordinarily and atrociously bad pun that we do during the News Gone By. So I wasn't using the comedy bell. But I needed some other things, and it just did not do the job. One sounded like clapping. I was rattling a cassette. But this Arizona metal iced tea can, that's not bad. I should have brought a grogger. I didn't. But if I say the word Haman, there you go. And then you can also rattle along at home and go boo and scream and you know, drown out his name. That's the whole point. You're not supposed to hear his name being spoken because he's been removed from the world, the regular world, and hopefully even the spirit world. It's funny, I saw, just now made me think of the movie that I saw a couple of days ago. I went to see Pan's Labyrinth. And I don't go to see a lot of movies, but I had some spare time in the city. And I thought, well, why not? You know, it's this three-hour window. And it had been nominated for a couple of Academy Awards. Didn't win, I don't think, the foreign film, but won some design awards, I guess understandably, and sounded kind of interesting. The reviews were very, very good for it. And it's really this grim, depressing film for a fantasy. It's gruesome, quite brutal, and even, yes, there are these big fantasy sequences, which are kind of murky and dark and greenish anyway, because it's a very unhappy film. I don't know if everybody's, or some people have seen it, but it has to do with this girl and her mom. Her mom's a widow of a nice guy who was probably killed in a Hamlet-esque way by her new husband, who is this military general that is hiding now in the outer regions of Spain. It's about 1944, so the fascists are leaving and running away from the quote-unquote the Reds and the liberals coming in. And so he hides out, but he's still planning, like, takeovers and stuff. And he's incredible. He's a psychopath. He's brutal. He's sick. He's like Zodiac Killer in a uniform. And so he's going to do these unbelievably horrible, grotesque things. And then there's violence done to him. I mean, and they really show as much. I guess it isn't just films like Hostel and what are some of the other the Saw movies that are showing graphically the brutality of violence. Now it's just political fantasy films are doing it too. And you just sit there going, like, do they have to? I mean, I know we're supposed to feel sorry for the girl. I know we're supposed to hate the bad guy. But my God, do we need to see him sew his lip together? Do we need to literally take this block of wood and smash a guy's teeth in about 10 times? I mean, I was giggling, but I think everybody else was really upset by it. But anyway, the final scene, the one vindication that the good guys have is that his natural-born son, the only thing that he cares about besides his own narcissistic victory, is that he has this child who will carry his name. And so at the end, he knows he's going to die. The whole village is surrounded. So he's like, all right, but at least before you kill me, tell my son who his dad was and what time his dad died. And they said, you know what? Your son is not even going to know your name or the fact that you existed. And then they shoot him. And now you don't have to see the movie, because I've just spoiled it for you. But anyway, that just made me think of these things. And it's 11:08, and I'm very, very thrilled and happy to say that they've made it! If you were listening to the last hour of this program, or at least 45 minutes of the pre-show of the program, you'll know that there was this wonderful comedy of errors of trying to get the guests from, it was like Candyland. They were somewhere in Stony Brook and then apparently Montauk, although I couldn't have been all the way out in Montauk, and trying to make their way somehow to Babylon on bad directions. And the fact that I don't drive and couldn't really work Yahoo MapQuest properly didn't help either. But thank you so much to Mark Torres, who is the host of Comic Book Novice, also on this radio station, for helping to get Richard Skipper and his friend here. He tried to mouth his name, Len or Glenn? Glenn with a G. So I'm thrilled they're here. We'll get to him in a little bit. Phew, you know, hand going across the forehead kind of motion. But first, got a couple of things to do, including letting you know who brings you this marvelous and unique and thoroughly disposable radio program. There are sponsors, including Hewlett, Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway, located at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, for all your copy and binding and printing needs, 516-295. Oh, no, excuse me. I'm giving you my number for things Dave's gone by-ish. 516-569-5577. 569-5577, Hewlett Minuteman Press. 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. Also, Dave's Gone By listeners get 10% off of Performing Arts Insider Theater magazine. It is the theater Bible, everything you want to know about Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance, 21 times a year, or you can also get a monthly subscription plan. PerformingArtsInsider.com is the place to find out about that. MortgagesRock.com. This is a cool place. It isn't just a place where you can go to get a loan or a mortgage. This is the place where they will tell you how you can help other people get the loans and mortgages that they need. You do what is essentially paperwork, and there's a lot of it. But when you learn how to do it, you make commission. And the folks at MortgagesRock.com will help you. They will teach you. Also, it's all there on the website, so the more you do, the more commission you earn. Go to MortgagesRock.com to find out more. And one last sponsor, got a shout-out to Jeff Goodman. Now, Jeff is very often a co-host on this program, as well as my other show, The Little Big Time, that we were kind of doing before. Jeff is still in Thailand. I think he's back next week, so hopefully he is, and we'll get to talk to him, because he's been in Bangkok, and he also went to Beijing this time for a week. So I'm sure he'll have a zillion stories to tell. And once he gets back, he'll start up his business again, which is Fantasy Schmancy Balloons, 516-797-3229, for your party needs. If you're having sweet 16s, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, a little late for your Purim party, but if it's a belated one, then call Jeff, because he does balloons and centerpieces, everything but flowers, for your occasion. Fancy Schmancy Balloons, 516-797-3229. Well, you are listening to Dave's Gone By. The name of this episode is Put On Your Sunday Clones. I can see Richard and his friend Glenn laughing, because Richard Skipper is here, as I said, best known for playing Carol Channing in cabarets and clubs and all sorts of places, and he also knows Carol personally. I don't, but Richard has said that she may even actually possibly be listening if she can get on AM1240WGBB.com. So that would be really, really neat. And Carol, if you're out there, hope you have a wonderful time with the show. So what's going to happen, aside from Richard, we've also got the Inside Broadway segment, where I'll be telling you what's happening on and off Broadway and reviewing a couple of shows. And if there's time, towards the end of the show, I'm going to do a World Weird Web segment. Haven't done one of those in a long time. But got to get to some commercials, and then I'll be back talking to Richard as Richard, right after this.
Swell, Manny, I can tell. Danny, you're still glowing, you're still crowing, you're still going strong. I feel the room swaying for the band's playing one of my old favorite songs from way back when. So bridge that gap, fellas, find me an empty lap, fellas, Dolly will never go away again.
Not only won't Dolly go away again, but she will be here in spirit, in the person of Richard Skipper, who is with us in person, thank goodness.
Can you believe it?
Thank you, Sunrise Highway.
Yes, absolutely.
So, welcome. Welcome
to
the...
It's good to be here, finally.
When did you actually set out? Was it about 9:30 at night?
I think that we left... I live in Rockland County, and I think we left our house probably around 8:45 to get here on time.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, you did get rather lost. I mean, did
absolutely.
You... Stony Brook... I know, as I said, I do another program on a Stony Brook radio station, so that is, like, way north, and also several miles east.
I took the scenic route.
Yeah, well, it is, except it was dark.
Absolutely.
So you hadn't seen anything. But anyway, welcome.
Thank
to...
Thank you, it's great to be here.
Dave's Gone By. Now, Richard, let's do a little bit of the bio stuff. You are a two-time winner of the MAC Award.
Which is the Manhattan Association of Cabarets and Clubs.
Which you're also involved with in a certain...
I am on the board of directors. I was vice president for a year, but because of my schedule, I've stepped down. I'm still on the board, but I'm no longer the vice president.
Okay. And it's funny, because we also had, just a few weeks ago, Barry Levitt, who's the fellow who's conducting her song.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he was talking a lot about Max stuff.
He was the president for a while, and Barry and I actually worked together years ago. Barry used to do the Lyrics and Lyricists series at the 92nd Street Y.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did his tribute to Julie Stein, of course, Julie Stein, did Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, I was one of the guest stars in the show.
As Carol Channing.
Right. Yes.
So did you have some of the issues with the Max that he has, or has it been a good thing for the most part?
Well, I think that Mac is on the right track. I think that with any type of an organization, there are always growing pains. And the interesting thing is that finally it's been the voting as far as the board is turned over to the membership.
Mm-hmm.
And but the term is 2 years, and then the membership can re-vote, or, you know, and we're still debating on what we're going to be doing with term limits. But as far as you get into a stride, and then it's election time again.
Yeah, I mean, 2 years is a very short to accomplish.
Absolutely.
Although, let's face it, I think we all wish George Bush had
term. We're only without 2 years. Saying, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, come on, you can make fun of George Bush. I mean, we're not going to make fun of Carol Channing here, but we're
not
going to
make
fun
of Carol
Bush.
Channing, but we'll make fun of George Bush.
Thank you. Thank goodness.
And, of course, Carol has had her own political issues. She was on Nixon's enemy hate list, which she said was one of the greatest honors of her life.
Now, how did she get on Nixon's hate list?
Well, Hello, Dolly had opened. Hello, Dolly was one of the... it was the biggest hit. It was, in its time, what The Producers is now.
Okay.
And Nixon actually wanted to campaign with the Hello, Dolly song as a campaign song. And but Lyndon Johnson ended up doing it. And Carol sang, "Be our guide, Lyndon, Lady Bird by your side, Lyndon." And she toured around the country, and he won. We knew that he won when he won, too.
So, in other words, and that's why Nixon...
And then shortly after that, Carol did perform at the White House for Nixon.
Oh.
And Pat, and she gave Pat one of her diamonds. And the next day, she was on the enemy hate list. She said either he didn't like my singing, or he just had the diamond appraised. I don't know.
Man. But did she have hard feelings for him?
No. I mean...
How do you find out you're actually on a... hate list like that?
It was, the Nixon enemy hate list was a big thing, and there were many, many people.
But who disclosed it? Was it like a Woodward and Bernstein thing, or did it just...
No, it was out there. It was something that was out there in the open. Joe Namath, and I don't know the reasons why, was actually on Nixon's enemy hate list.
Long hair.
And, well, maybe that was it, and or wearing pantyhose. Who knows? Carol used to joke that she was above Joe Namath for obvious reasons, alphabetically, and it was something that they both were very proud of.
Good heavens! Now let's, since we're talking to you
as
at
me,
this stage,
right?
And then Peter will talk to Carol. But first of all, you were doing, I assume, other kinds of things in entertainment and in performing
before
the impersonation and during as well.
Right.
But how did that all come about, of shifting from being Richard Skipper singer, Richard Skipper actor?
Do we have a week on this? I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest version and interrupt me and and ask questions as we go along. But I was the kind of kid, I grew up in South Carolina, who mimicked everything I saw on television. And my introduction to Carol Channing was actually through Lucille Ball. Lucille Ball, in one of the episodes of The Lucy Show, does an impersonation of Carol Channing. And I was mimicking my version of Lucille Ball doing Carol Channing. And then it was shortly after that that I saw Carol do a television special, Carol Channing and Pearl Bailey, live on Broadway.
Right.
And I became a fan. And I never actually pursued this, but I was the kind of kid, as I said, who was always mimicking these voices.
Right.
And so I was performing at assemblies. I would get up and I would do different voices, and Carol Channing was one of the voices that I did. And then I moved to New York when I was 18 years
old. I'm going to stop you there, because did you get beaten up a lot? I mean, it's one thing to make fun of the principal.
But especially in South Carolina. I was the first one laughing. They laughed with me, and instead of laughing at me. I was a very popular kid in school.
Huh.
I was everyone in the kids knew me, in the school knew me. As a matter of fact, a few years ago, I went back to my hometown to do my show, Carol Channing in Concert. I was given the key to the city by the mayor of my hometown, and a friend of mine that I went to high school was interviewed by one of the local papers, and she said there were the rich kids, there were the poor kids, there were farm kids, there were the city kids, there were the bookworms, there were the kids that never studied, the delinquents that were always in trouble, and then there was Richard. She said Richard was in a category by himself. But there wasn't a person in my high school who did not know who I was. So I was that kid who was always out there. I started acting when I was 13. I made my debut in a Jerry Herman musical, MAME, as Patrick Dennis.
Okay.
And I did a lot of theater.
Oh, wait, when you say you made, you're not talking about high school anymore. You're talking about you were in MAME where?
In a community theater in South Carolina, and I did a lot of theater. I was auditioning for everything, and my parents always said that as long as I maintained my grades, they had no problem with that. And I was out there, and I was in the National Honor Society. I worked very hard at it, and I continued to pursue a career. And I was reading a book one day when I was doing MAME, just an interesting story here, true story. I was reading a book, and it says, make up your mind what you're going to do with your life and do it. And I announced to the cast that 5 years from that date that I was going to move to New York. And on August 5th of 1979, I moved to New York at the age of 18 to pursue a career in the theater. And I was in New York for just a little bit of time. Some friends of mine came up to visit. There used to be a place in New York called the Piano Bar, mm-hmm. which was at 67th and Broadway.
Was that Bemelman's or no? No,
No, it was in Charlie O's, I think it was.
Okay.
Houston Allred, who is still going strong now on the West Coast, was the piano player there. And every Thursday night was Broadway night. And they would salute a different Broadway show. And the cast of the shows would come in, and they would sign autographs, and they would get up and sing. And I would get up and sing each week as Richard. It was an open mic type of situation. And my friends were visiting, and they said, you should get, and Houston asked me to do an encore. And I said, I don't have anything prepared. And my friends said, well, do Carol Channing. And he said, you do Carol Channing? No, you have to realize I was 18 years old. And I said, no, I don't do Carol Channing, because this was not something that I was pursuing, and I certainly didn't want to do it in front of an audience, because I really didn't think that I was... It was fun to do it for my friends, but to do this in a professional setting, I didn't think that I was ready to do that. But I got up, I performed as Carol Channing, doing the entire Hello Dolly number, and got a standing ovation, and as a result of that, I ended up getting cast in an off-Broadway show where I played an impersonator who does Carol Channing, and then, and I'm jumping way ahead of the story, a lot, and I had a costume, and I would pull it out on Halloween, and I would hit all the piano bars, and I would go out and perform, and I would just come in, do a number, and leave.
Well, let me ask, also, by the way, if you could just not hit that table so much, because it's actually coming through on the mic, but about the, have you seen, well, you probably saw the original Chorus Line. I don't know if you've seen the most recent revival.
I haven't
revival.
Seen the recent, but I did see the original.
So, was it kind of like the depiction there, I didn't remember this about Chorus Line at all, but the most troubled, quote-unquote, kid, the most horrible thing for him was the fact that he started doing female impersonations, and
well,
that he felt it was seamy, but
I really avoided it for a long, long time because there are so many negative connotations that go with this. If we can talk on this for a moment, I perform all over the country. I know I'm jumping ahead of my story, but I perform all over the country. I have performed everywhere from Carnegie Hall across the boards. As I've said to you earlier, I don't make fun of Carol. I treat her with the utmost respect. Now, the thing with, I don't even like to call myself an impersonator, because most people who are doing an impersonation are actually making fun of their subject. They are actually filtering their subject through their eyes. And 9 times out of 10, they are presenting what they've seen other impersonators do. A perfect example, throw me an icon.
Mercedes McCambridge.
Just been your do the devil voice from The Exorcist or something. Someone who is overly impersonated.
Bob Dylan. Okay.
Betty Davis.
Oh, Betty. Okay.
Now Betty Davis. Every impersonator is flicking the cigarette around, and they're doing these movements and things that they've picked up mostly from Charles Pierce, who was well known for doing his Betty Davis, and what happens is as this goes on with impersonator after impersonator after impersonator doing the person that they are impersonating, they're getting further and further away from their subject. And that subject ends up becoming a parody or a clown type of figure. Carol Channing is a bigger-than-life personality.
True.
I don't need to embellish anything beyond what she has created on stage. What I try to do, which is very different from what most impersonators do, is I try to get into the heart and soul of what made this person a great entertainer. I try to present her on stage to the best of my ability, because I am not Carol Channing, to the best of my ability. My goal each time that I walk out on stage is to give the audience the experience that I've had each time that I have sat watching Carol Channing perform.
Well, can you put into words what makes her so special and unique?
I can absolutely put into words. What makes her special and unique is this bond that she has with her audience. It's not about special effects. It's not about chandeliers falling. It's not about fog rolling in, Klieg lights rolling. It's about a bond between her and her audience. When she walks on stage, her number one goal is to entertain that audience. It's not about her. It's about the audience. And to blow my own horn for a moment, I think I carry that same gift. When I walk out on stage, my entire reason for being there is to entertain my audience. I've always said there are entertainers,
mm-hmm.
and there are performers. I want to put myself in the former category. I want to entertain the audience as much as I possibly can. I want them to forget their problems. I want them to be to escape what's going on in the real world. I don't talk about politics in my show. I don't talk about what's going on in the real world. I take them on a journey with me.
Inside, everything is beautiful.
That's right.
That's the basic thing. Before we have to kind of let you go to bring Carol, quotation marks in my fingers, in, might as well tell how then that synced up with your first being able to meet her in person.
Well, I found out in, this was in 80, well, it was the last time she was doing Dolly on Broadway, so this was 94. It had been announced that Hello Dolly was coming to Broadway, and several of my friends said that you should do a show to do a tribute to Carol. I didn't know whether audiences would be interested in seeing, again, an impersonation, for lack of a better word, of Carol Channing when they could see the real thing. But I began doing research. I began studying her beyond Hello Dolly and beyond Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. I began putting this show together. And then I found out that the New York City Gay Men's Chorus was going to be honoring Jerry Herman at Carnegie Hall. So I started a campaign to get into that show. I thought this would be a way of bringing to the masses what I do. I wrote letters. I made phone calls. I begged. I pleaded. I cajoled. Everything landed on deaf ears. They were not interested in doing this. So a friend of mine called me up, said, "What are you doing on Sunday night, the night of a concert?" He said, "I have been hired to perform at the post party for Carol Channing." He said, "Why don't you show up at the party as Carol Channing?"
Wow.
I said, "Well, I don't know. What if she doesn't like me?" He says, "Well, then you know where you stand with it." And I had the feeling, I didn't have as much invested at that time as I obviously do now, but if she didn't like what I was doing, I could just chuck it all and continue pursuing my career again, because I had taken this little curve in the road, putting this show together. I walked into this room dressed as Carol. Carol was sitting at the end of the table. They brought me to her table, and they says, "Carol, where did you learn to do this?" And Carol asked me, "Where did you learn to do this?" And I said, "Binnington College in Vermont." "You do know where that is, Carol? It's the lower left-hand corner part of the map, the part of the state that's always purple," which, of course, is her material. So she said, "Well, how long have you been impersonating me?" I said, "Well, who's to say you're not impersonating me?" And we were off and running. She asked me a lot of questions. I ended up doing my show that night for her. She said that it was the first time that she had ever been shown by an impersonator with respect. And I asked her permission to open the show. She said, "Take the gauntlet and run with it." I opened the show in New York at Don't Tell Mama.
Oh, yeah.
As a result of doing that show, I got booked in Atlantic City. I've done three long runs in Atlantic City. I was off and running, and I've been doing it full time ever since.
So full time, you don't do anything than, you know, Richard Skipper,
well,
sings Bowie
exactly. When I am not on stage performing as Carol Channing, the rest of my life is devoted to pursuing the work. Still, at this point, my phone doesn't ring off the hook, but I work a lot. I even teach workshops on making a living on the road, teaching other performers who have self-contained acts how to go about it the way that I do.
Hmm.
Because, and the reason that my phone doesn't ring off the hook are, you know, various reasons. First of all, people do have a preconceived idea of what my show is about.
It's not as if they're going to hire you for Raisin in the Sun.
Exactly. Or, the straight venues are afraid that they're going to get a drag show, which scares them off, and that's not what my show is. And then the gay venues feel that Carol Channing is not a quote-unquote contemporary icon, and so they're more interested in seeing the Chers and the Madonnas and the Whitney Houstons, and so I'm constantly having to sell myself.
There are Whitney Houston impersonators?
There are a lot of Whitney Houston impersonators. You'd be surprised.
Okay.
Probably more than there are Carol Channing impersonators. But that's, and those are the issues that I run into on a regular basis. So I have learned to be a great salesman in terms of selling the show. And
again, before we bring in you as Carol, where are you going to be over the next, say, March and April?
Well, I'm doing a benefit at the 12 Miles West Theater in Montclair, New Jersey, later this month.
Mm-hmm.
This will be my third time there. I do a lot of repeat business. And then I'm bringing my show back to New York for one night only for Sylvia's Place, which is a shelter for teenagers in New York. And I'm doing a benefit, and this will be at Helen's. And if I may throw out, my web address is www.richardskipper.com.
Don't throw out the web address. It's a perfectly good web address.
No, and they can go to my schedule page, and they can see where I'm appearing.
Richardskipper.com.
Or they can book me.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's true.
So, we have booked Richard Skipper and Richard as Carol, and I've also booked Peter Fitzgerald to come here and talk to the icon, or the icon in quotation marks, kind of, however you want to put it. Stick around.
The legend within the legend.
Well, thank you. Yes, the legend within the legend. It's kind of like those things you had when you were a kid, where you shaped things out of clay and then you chipped away at it and then the actual statue was inside.
That's right.
That's exactly what we're doing here on Dave's Gone By, so do not change that dial.
I have always been a woman who arranges things for the pleasure and the profit it derives. I have always been a woman who arranges things like furniture and daffodils and lives. When a man with a chimney tongue meets a girl with a diffident air, why should the tortured creatures beat around the bush when heaven knows Mother Nature always needs a little push? So I put my hand in here, I put my hand in there.
Well, hello, Aru. Oh, I'm so thrilled. I'm so happy. I'm so excited. Ladies and gentlemen, this is, I am, what's the Jewish word for this? Kvelling, I think it is.
Oh, verklempt.
No, verklempt is when you're sad. Verklempt is when you're upset. It's like, oh, I broke a nail. Then I get verklempt.
Oh, that would be something that would affect Barbara Streisand a lot.
Well, you mentioned, the sacred word, Barbara, I love you.
Oh,
but I love you too.
Yes. Well, she did the movie version of Hello, You Know Who.
Were you upset about that?
Yeah, well, it was like my baby had been kidnapped. I have to tell you, I was appearing in Chicago, and I read, just like the rest of the world, that Barbara Streisand was going to be doing the movie version of Hello, Dolly. And, well, even though I was on the first floor, I almost jumped out the window.
Oh, you had a Marnie Nixon moment. I've had those. I know how they feel.
Although, I will say this, although I don't feel that she was right for the role, nobody could sing those songs like Barbara Streisand. She has a voice of God. I mean, it is an angel's voice. Don't you agree?
Well, yes, I'm a Barbara fan, aren't we all?
Yes, except when the only time I ever got airsick, I was going to Europe, France, and the in-flight movie was Hello, Dolly.
Well, did you grab a parachute and say, let me off this plane?
Well,
if I
could have gotten off at that moment, I would have gotten off.
Oh, my goodness.
And she should have gotten off as well.
Well. But have you ever met her? Have you had tea and crumpets and what
no,
stars do.
No, tea and crumpets, but I do respect her as an artist. I think she is one of the best in the business, and I have nothing but respect for her.
Now, here's another person, since we're talking about stars and other famous and important people.
Yes.
I would love to know your thoughts about David Merrick, the producer, the big, bad, nasty
man,
whom helped
David
make you a star.
Well, David Merrick, some of your listeners out there may be too young to know who David Merrick was. David Merrick was a great Broadway impresario. He could make or break a career with a single chomp on his cigar. He had an office in New York that was all red. It was like going into, it was like going to see the devil when
my
you went
goodness.
To see him. But I had nothing but respect for him. David Merrick saw me. I was doing the Millionaires in an arena, believe it or not, George Bernard Shaw, and he came to see the show, and he says, Carol, we're going to get a show for you. And he believed in me. You know, Hello, Dolly was written for Ethel Merman.
That's right.
Yes, but David Merrick saw Ethel Merman, God bless her, did not want to do the show at that moment, and David Merrick sought me out, and he asked, he said, we're going to create something for you. And he brought me to Jerry Herman and to Gower Champion. Gower Champion had been the director choreographer of Lyndon Ear, which was the show that brought me to New York and made me a star.
We'll talk about Van Gogh. No, I'm joking there.
I know it is. Yes, I get it. Well, anyway, Lyndon Ear was the show that brought me to the attention of Julie Stein and Anita Loose, of course, and I did Gentlemen Prefer Blondes as a result of that. But Gower Champion did not think that I was right for Dolly Levi, and so I had to audition for it, just like anyone else auditioning for something. And I came, you see, I had a very big hit with Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, and then I did a lot of work, but I couldn't get my own show. I couldn't get back on track, so I went through a very dry period. And
That's what they make KY for, darling. Good heavens. No, I kid. I joke.
Yes.
Please continue.
But they really thought that I was not right for the role, and I came in and I auditioned for Jerry and for Gower Champion, and I did the Money Is Like Manure speech.
Yes. Please do. You must do it.
Well,
you must.
Money, if you'll pardon the expression, is like manure. It's not worth a thing unless it's spread around encouraging young things to grow. And I did the speech, and all of a sudden, they knew at that moment that I knew exactly what Dolly Levi was about. And it was at that moment that they decided to give me the role.
Oh, my goodness. Did you know while you were doing it that the moment when you came down the staircase would be legendary? Or while you were doing the scene in rehearsals, did it just seem like another exciting kind of scene, but no big deal?
Absolutely not. If I believed at that moment that this, what I was going to do was going to be legendary, or that it was going to make history, or that I was a legend, I would become a very boring person, don't you think? No, we were there to create this role, and when we opened in Detroit, we were all over the place. I mean, we got the most devastating reviews. I think the first night the show ran about 4.5 hours. They thought the show was going to be such a bomb. The first act of Hello, Dolly ended with a butterfly ballet. Can you believe this?
Oh, heaven.
The show at that moment was about Gower Champion. I'm sorry, it was about Horace Vandegelder, and it was about Minnie Faye. It was about Cornelius Hackle. It was about everything but Dolly Levi. And once Jerry Herman got into the mindset of Thornton Wilder, who wrote The Matchmaker, upon which this is based, he found the spine of Hello, Dolly. And the spine of Hello, Dolly is about rejoining the human race, about saying, I am going to get out there, I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps, and I'm going to get out there and do it again. And once he did that, we had Dolly Levi, and we started at the National Theater in Washington, D.C. We brought the show to New York, and the rest is history.
Well, I think that's what people don't realize about that song, because they hear it everywhere, from Louis Armstrong to people doing it all the time. They don't realize that the point is, it's the first time she's been back at that club since her husband died.
Oh,
so it's a very important play.
It's very, very interesting, and this is how Broadway has really changed. Louis Armstrong took that that song, and he made it into a New Orleans jazz arrangement. And this was before we had become famous with the show. And when Jerry Herman heard the song, he said, well, that's not exactly what I wrote, but I love it nonetheless. And everybody came to the show in New York to hear that song that Louis Armstrong had made famous. It knocked the Beatles clear off the charts.
Is Jerry Herman your best friend? I get this feeling that you have this kinship.
Jerry Herman is my solar plexus. Yes,
a little closer than
Jerry
I thought.
Herman is two people in one because he is a lyricist and a composer. He gave me Dolly Levi on a platter. And, let's face it, he wrote the show for Ethel Merman, and this clarion voice in the theater that was going to belt these songs to the back of the theater, and then I come in with this basso profundo voice, and, every song that Jerry wrote, he wrote with his mother in mind.
I did not know that.
His mother was an entertainer, and he always thought of his mother when he was composing and writing every song. And he always said to me, Carol, I'm going to make this sound exactly the way that it should sound with your voice. So he brought in the oboes, and he brought in these instruments that would bring my voice down, and it would make this sound that was, from the Lower East Side of New York. And that's where we created Dolly Levi. And it was so magical. But every person that came to do the show, and there was Ginger Rogers and Betty Grable and B.B. Osterwald and Phyllis Diller and Martha Ray and Pearl Bailey and Mary Martin and Ethel Merman, they all brought their own personalities to it. But I can always say that I opened that door.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my goodness. I'm shivering just thinking of doors opening in my head. But let me ask you, though, that song, that show, it's you. It will always be identified with you. You must be. You're so proud. You're so thrilled. Let me ask, please. Do you ever kind of get tired of having to sing it every single time? Like, you're always asked, oh, hello, postman. Oh, hello, oncologist. Do you sometimes just want to do Before the Parade Passes By instead? Or maybe a Beatles tune. I don't know.
I never get tired of that song. I always tell people I never sing Hello, Dolly. It was the chorus boys that sang Hello, Dolly. I sang Hello, Harry, Hello, Louie. But the thing is, no, I never get tired of that song. Every time that I go out on stage, it's a different experience. It's not the same experience. Everyone who comes into the theater, I've always said that in order for a show to be successful, you need people from different walks of life. If you had an audience made up all of postmen, it would be boring because they all think the same way. But when you've got a postman in the audience, and you've got a doctor, and you've got a lawyer, and you've got an Indian chief and a candlestick maker, you've got all these people in the
audience.
Sounds
like my last party. Yeah.
Yes. Well, each of these people brings their own lives into that experience. When the curtain rises on a show, that's the magic of live theater. Those people that are brought as a collective to celebrate this are not the same as the people that were there last night, nor will they be the same as the people that are there tomorrow night. It's a different experience. So each time that I get an opportunity to sing these songs, I'm absolutely thrilled to do so.
Oh, that's so great to hear, because we love hearing you, well, Carol and U.S. Carol doing them, of course. Let me ask, I'll put it a little more towards the personal side here. Now that everybody's so concerned about anorexic models and the way people are eating and bulimia and anorexia, you were eating strange little things for years.
Well, most people don't know this, but when I was doing Hello, Dolly in 1964, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. Most people don't know this. I was doing the show. I was actually going through chemo and everything at the time, and I had to be put, and of course, I'm a Christian Scientist. My father, George Channing, was a lecturer and a newspaperman. He was the editor-in-chief of all of the Christian Science publications. He worked with Mary Baker Eddy. city. He traveled around the country. So in order for me to be able to deliver, to be on stage night after night after night, I had to be very careful with the foods that I ate. So I was very, very, I studied what would be the right combinations of food. I was doing this long before it became fashionable to do so. I was, so when I would go out to restaurants, a lot of them were happy to have me there. So I would go in with my own food and I would bring it in and I would eat it. But now, you know, I've passed all that. I can eat whatever I want. I'm partial to Subway sandwiches. I love Subway sandwiches. And every once in a while, I even have a cheeseburger.
No.
Oh, yes.
I would give every penny I own to watch you eat a cheeseburger.
Oh, I'm sure you would.
Oh, heavens to mercy. And let me ask, you're married once more?
Yes, I married Harry Collegian, who is my high school sweetheart.
Oh.
You see, you have to know this, that I had been in another marriage. I had three other marriages, but they don't count. And then I had written a memoir of sorts called Just Lucky, I guess. Now, I know you're wondering why I named the book Just Lucky, I guess. Well, it's like the client says to the prostitute, how did you get into a profession like this? Just lucky, I guess. And that was the title of my book because I have been the luckiest person in the world. I've worked with the most wonderful people in show business. I've had an incredible career. But something that you never forget is your first love. And I wrote about my first love in this book, Harry Collegian, and a mutual friend of ours called him up, told him about the book, and all of a sudden, Harry Collegian got in touch with me, and we spoke on the phone. We got together 3 weeks later. He proposed, and we've been together ever since.
Oh, I wish you a mazel tov. I'm not even Jewish, but I'm wishing you a mazel tov anyway.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, this is so great. Now, unfortunately, I've got to give the microphone back to Dave in a minute or two.
I have so enjoyed this.
You have to sing it for me. Please, Peter, or Dave, or both of us, however you want to do it. Just please, and thank you so much, by the way, both Carol and Richard, and Richard is Carol, and Glenn is Carol, and
if
Richard,
I can
and,
just leave one
and Bob
thing,
and Carol, and Peg and Alice, yes.
What is so wonderful about doing this is we're live here, and there's nothing like live theater, and my life has become about the live theater, and I have set up the Dr. Carol Channing Harry Collegian Foundation for the Arts, and it's to raise money for funding for all the schools and universities so that every kid in the state of California who wants to pursue a career in the arts can do so. They can find a link on Richard Skipper's website, www.richardskipper.com, and that will take them right to my website as well, which is www.carolchanning.org.
CarolChanning.org, RichardSkipper.com, DavesGoneBy.org. Such wonderful websites, and of course, KinkyMen.com, but I'll go into
that
later.
That's another thing.
That's totally another thing. So sing to me, please. Please sing to me. Oh, please, and thank you again.
Goodbye, Peter. Well, goodbye, David. It was nice to be here in Babylon, finally, at last. We almost didn't make it, but we made it.
I am so thrilled. Thank you. Bless you. Thank you, Glenn. You were rather quiet. Say something, Glenn.
Something.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more of Dave's Gone By.
Just love you. Thank you so much, and keep it up.
We'll go there, too. Bye now.
Goodbye.
Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater's Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide.
Yes, it is Inside Broadway on this very Broadway-esque and really fun and wild Dave's Gone By episode. Thanks so much to Glenn and to Richard Skipper and to Carol, of course, for stopping by, as well as the wonderful Peter Fitzgerald. Yeah, what a night it's been. But there's still more to come. I've got to do some Inside Broadway news and, if there's time, reviews for you. Now, this is the week. Now it's happening. I've been telling you about this for the past couple of weeks, but it started today, and it's going through March 11th. It's called the 2420, I think it's called. If you show up at the box office for a bunch of off-Broadway shows 20 minutes before curtain time, any seats that they have left are made available to you for $20. So now understand, most off-Broadway tickets now are $50, $60, $70, sometimes $80. So this is a real deal, and I'm not doing a quote-unquote a commercial for them. This is just a whole thing where all the off-Broadway shows got together, their producers and the League of Off-Broadway Theaters, and said, let's try and get people to the theater in the bad weather, and let's try to fill up our seats and get more folks to shows. And these are some of the shows that are taking part. You've got 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother, A Jew Grows in Brooklyn, a lot of Jewish stuff, Altar Boys, not so Jewish, The Big Voice, The Awesome 80s Prom, The Fever, The Fantastics, the new play Bill W. and Dr. Bob, Gutenberg the Musical, I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change, Jewtopia, Naked Boy Singing, Perfect Crime, Room Service, Stomp, The Voice, The Inheritance, and there's more. If you go to offbroadway.com, offbroadway.com, no hyphen, you can get the whole list and the information. But the basic information is, go to the box office, 20 minutes, if there's tickets left, they're only $20, and it's only now from March 4th through March 11th. So go. Do it. If you've been putting off going to the theater, you think it's too expensive, come on, $20 for an off-Broadway show, go do at least one this week. You owe it to yourself. Okay, some other things happening on and off-Broadway in this coming week include a revival on Broadway of Prelude to a Kiss, opening this Thursday, March 8th, at the American Airlines Theater. It's a roundabout theater production. Craig Lucas's 1988 comedy is going to be directed by Dan Sullivan. He's one of the blue-chip Broadway directors. He staged Proof and the Heidi Chronicles. And the main thing is the cast of this one features John Mahoney. You know him as the father in Frasier. And Annie Parise, who was the previous Law and Order, the prosecuting attorney assistant. So she's playing, I think, the bride who exchanges kisses with an old man on her wedding day, but it turns out to be more than a kiss. Now, the original Broadway cast was Timothy Hutton and Mary Louise Parker. She's now in Weeds. The movie, of course, starred Alec Baldwin and Meg Ryan, so it remains to be seen whether John Mahoney and Annie Parise will have the same kind of magic. Prelude to a Kiss, opening Thursday at the Roundabout. I mentioned Bill W. and Dr. Bob. That opens tomorrow, March 5th, at New World Stages on West 50th Street. This is the true story of two drunken people who ended up founding Alcoholics Anonymous during the Great Depression. Now, Bill was wiped out in the crash, and Dr. Bob, is a doctor, a surgeon, who was also an alcoholic for 30 years, and would be in the operating room drunk. So, maybe he wasn't drunk, maybe he was drunk the rest of the time, but managed to operate anyway. And they got together just after the crash, I guess in the early 30s, and put together Alcoholics Anonymous. So the show, Bill W. and Dr. Bob, is about them, and it opens on Monday. By the way, whoever is calling, I can't pick up until we go to the next commercial, so get to you as soon as I can. Anyway, we've got also opening an off-Broadway show that opened tonight, Dying City at the Mitzi Newhouse Theater, a Lincoln Center theater. Christopher Shin wrote this one. It's an intimate play set in a spare downtown Manhattan apartment, and it involves the historic events of now, like Iraq and 9/11, transforming the lives of three characters, including the wife of a soldier who died in Iraq and his twin brother, Peter, a lot of Peters today, Pablo Schreiber, who is Liev Schreiber's brother, and we remember him, Pablo was Tony nominated for Awake and Sing, the revival that they just did. He plays both of the brothers in the play Dying City, which opened tonight at the Mitzi Newhouse. I already saw a review of it, and it was very, very good review. And then there's a festival, an off-Broadway festival, or kind of off-off-Broadway, actually, called the Frigid Festival, produced by Horse Trade Theater in collaboration with a theater out in San Francisco called the Exit Theater. It's a celebration, they say, of uncensored downtown and independent-type theater. 12 days, three theaters, over 150 performances, and 30 theater companies. It's running Wednesday, March 7th to Sunday, March 18th at three different venues downtown next to each other, like St. Mark's Place and East 4th Street, the Frigid Festival. Check it out. Now, whoever was calling, I've got to play the Performing Arts Insider commercial, so now this would be a good time to call back. But don't go away. I've got a little more of Inside Broadway and a bit more of Dave's Gone By coming up after these messages. There is a season, turn, 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 turn the pages of Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, because this is the season for Broadway. All the big shows are opening in the next few weeks. Learn about them all. For 64 years, Performing Arts Insider has been the Bible of Broadway. Find out why by going to PerformingArtsInsider.com. Subscriptions are 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. So turn, turn, turn to Performing Arts Insider for every show under heaven. Yes, Performing Arts Insider, thank them so much for sponsoring Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By. I'm going to do a bit more of Broadway stuff because I'm going to review a couple of the shows that I saw this week, including the World War One era play Journey's End. Well, it was written shortly after World War One by R.C. Sheriff, and they're finally bringing it back to Broadway. Now, this is a play, it's kind of an English version of Our Town, even though that play is about a war, and Our Town is about a small New England community. But for them, it's one of those plays that all English school children are taught, all the theaters and their local and community theaters have done. It's like this major part of their theater legacy, and Americans really don't know it, or at least they didn't until now, that they're doing a Broadway revival at the Helen Hayes Theater on West 44th Street, and it stars, the fellow from One Day at a Time, and I'm blanking on him. I thought I had written it down. By the way, let me take this phone call, because it is midnight on WGBB, so let me see who is calling Dave's Gone By. Dave's Gone By, you are on the air. Hello? Hello, you're on the air. No, you're not. Okay. Well, thanks for calling. Anyway, Journey's End is really very, very well acted, and it's got it has the camaraderie of the men down. It has, as with most of the later and good war stories, what's most powerful about it is usually the quieter moments or the little things that make you remember the fact that at any time, if someone leaves the room, if someone leaves what is the bunker, the trench, they may never come back. So as they're going out, one person will remove a piece of jewelry, or he'll hand some of his belongings to someone else. And they don't even have to say why. You know that the reason they're doing it is, just in case, this is going to go to my family. And you have quite a few moments of that all the way through, and it's quite touching. There's also the tension and the build-up, because they have to do a raid where they send a couple of different soldiers out to go and try and grab a German soldier, bring him back, and question him for information about what the other side is doing, because really the Germans and the Britons are a football field, or a rugby field, as they would say, apart, and yet it's worlds apart, obviously. So finely acted, and a powerful play. I had read it before I went to see it, and I think they did a really superb job. And it's funny, I am usually the first one to complain if a play has loud, noisy sound effects, or if there are very loud gunshots, because I'm very skittish about that. It's a, I don't know if it's a neurosis, but it's just a thing that makes me really tense and almost to the point of hyperventilation, depending on my mood. Just one of those things I'll throw out there. And it kind of almost happened in the show I saw last night called Howard Katz, where they spice up this basic regular play with loud sound effects and you know, loud bursts of music, which is completely unnecessary and jarring, and I guess trying to keep folks awake and alert, because maybe they entrust the material to do that. But with Journey's End, which is a play about war, yes, the sound effects kind of get sort of loud, but not as loud as some of the other people have said, and they're totally germane and understandable considering the context, considering that the production ends with them being bombarded. So it really, you know, that didn't bother me. It shouldn't bother you. Go see Journey's End playing at the Helen Hayes Theater. Also wanted to say good things about The Voisey Inheritance, which is playing at the Atlantic Theater on West 20th Street. Now, that's an old play also, by Harley Granville Barker, and he's the fellow who wrote The Madras House, which is just coincidentally also being revived off-Broadway now, being done by the Mint Theater. And Madras House is kind of long, and it's very, very well done, but it doesn't really, for me, come together as a story. It feels like four one-act plays, sort of about the same themes that he's trying to link together. Roy's The Inheritance, in this particular production, is adapted by David Mamet, who streamlines it, took, I think, a 3.5-hour play, zoomed it down to 2, and he sticks to the one main story, which is all about this son of a wealthy family who, and the family is basically there doing other people's finances. By the way, I should mention this is AM 1240, WGBB Freeport, 1204 AM. So Gospel All Night should be starting pretty soon. I assume they were the folks who were calling in before, and I couldn't pick up the phone, so they'll be here when they'll be here. And that's why I'm continuing with Inside Broadway about the Voisey inheritance. So anyway, the Voisey son discovers that the family has, well, I guess embezzlement would be the word, that here they are, they're responsible for all these people's finances, for holding them and investing them and taking percentages, and what they've really been doing for more than a generation is borrowing Peter to pay Paul and then wondering how the heck they're going to pay Peter with people's livelihoods, with their retirement money. And so the son decides to put a stop to this. I mean, he's absolutely flabbergasted and aghast at his father, that he's been doing this juggling act for years. And he doesn't want to be like his father. He wants to make things right. But in doing so, he ends up making more enemies and causing more trouble than the father did just by being a really smooth businessman that everybody liked. He's very avuncular. And as long as people got their checks occasionally, they didn't know anything was wrong. Meanwhile, the son comes in and says, everything's all wrong, and everybody goes into a panic. So, you know, it's a nice streamlined story and pretty well done, and I think worth seeing. I wasn't terribly, like, captivated by it or moved by it. And after a while, we get a little tired of the son's attitude. I mean, he's such a moral prig, and he doesn't quite really learn from it, and then there are senses where you just want to scream at him and say, you know, you're not going to be doing something wrong if you do pay back X, Y, and Z, but not Z, Y, and X later on. And you just sit there and watch him go through these things, and you're like, okay, we get it. But still pretty darn good. The Voisey Inheritance, playing at the Atlantic Theater on West 20th Street. Well, going to finish this Inside Broadway with a little sad news, but thank God, not tragic news. Evan Pappas, who is an actor who was doing a few Broadway shows for a while. He was in Parade, that musical, and he also was in the Broadway version of My Favorite Year. And I remember him from doing, gosh, must be 15 years ago, a revival of I Can Get It For You Wholesale off-Broadway. And he was Outer Critics Circle nominated for that. Anyway, Evan Pappas was doing a tour, the national tour, of On Golden Pond in Arizona last week when he was in a terrible car accident. He was driving with his co-star on their off day going shopping, and they were struck by an SUV. So he is in intensive care. He's in serious but not critical condition. He's got broken ribs, a broken pelvis and jaw. He has a collapsed lung, but he's not dying. So thank God for that, and hope it's going to be, they say, a very long and tough recovery for him. But at least he's stable. At least he'll be, on some level, okay. So I want to wish, especially on this Purim, a refuah shlema to Evan Pappas. And we hope that we will, in the months and years ahead, be able to tell what new shows on Broadway, off Broadway, regionally, that he is doing inside Broadway. We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider.
World Weird Web, 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 World Weird Web.
Yes, indeed, the World Weird Web, which is, gosh, we did this, I think, on our first or second program way back in 2002, and did it a few times since. But it tends to be a long time in between because we do so much other stuff on Dave's Gone By. But this week I was watching and almost obsessively and addictively watching stuff on YouTube because it's kind of turning into the new Google in a way. Remember when you first discovered Google and the search engines? And it, not just when they had a little bit of information on them, but when you could look up everything to find out every question that you have about anything even before Wikipedia. And it's just, oh, okay, there's a website about this and this, and you had to sift what was correct and incorrect anyway. But still, it was this wonderland that opened up. And now YouTube, even though it's merged with Google, apparently, there's just, you put in anything in the hopes of finding stuff that, like when James Brown died, I was like, gosh, I would really like to see some great classic James Brown in his prime footage. Because all we see in later times is, he'd be doing Living in America and barely moving, still having something in a band, but not like James Brown when he was the hardest and greatest working man in show business. So you go to YouTube and you Google James Brown, and I did find a couple of clips of him in like that prime 1960s, 70s era mode. But also, because YouTube is so egalitarian, at least at this point, you also saw the first thing that they had was him, I think it was on like a CNN or an MSNBC show with a Gloria Allred type, and he was talking about his divorce, and you could tell that he was unbelievably high. I mean, he was on so many drugs, he could be his own South American country right then. I mean, and she would ask him questions, and he would answer only with his own song titles. So, James Brown, how are you doing? I'm you good? And you just looked at him, and you knew he was in space somewhere. And it was hysterically funny in retrospect. And the fact that he ended up living a good, 10, 15 years after that. And, that was the bad era when cops were chasing him and, PCP in his pockets. So that was the kind of thing you could find on YouTube. The good, the bad, and the ugly, and the great. Well, I found some really great stuff because that's what YouTube is for. So, I wanted to see, hey, it occurred to me that I don't think I've ever seen Tom Lehrer perform. I mean, I certainly never saw him in concert, but there hasn't really been much footage. And now that I'm thinking about it, I think I went to the Museum of Radio and Television in Midtown Manhattan and was able to see an episode of Not That Was the Week That Was, which he was on fairly often, but he wasn't on the episodes that they had. But it was an English show, not Beyond the Fringe, but an equivalent program that they used to do in England, and he was on there doing a song. But that's the only time I've seen Lehrer do his thing. Now, Lehrer's one of the great satirical songwriters of all time. So wouldn't it be great if you could go on the computer and find Tom Lehrer singing one of his compositions? Well, go figure. They have footage of him looking really spry and good. I don't know from how many years ago, but not too long ago, appearing at some university-type gathering lecture in honor of some other professor. And he's not singing his most famous songs. In fact, that's what makes it priceless. He's doing these kind of math mnemonic fun songs that only university, high-level math students would get. But just to see him talk and joke around in a not the high pressure, really be hilarious kind of thing that he had to do in the 1950s and 60s. But just still, the personality, the voice, the piano style, and the brilliance of the wordplay comes through. So there's about 16 minutes of footage divided into two segments if you go onto YouTube and just Google Tom, YouTube. Google, I guess you could say, Tom Lehrer. And other than that, you also get all those little pieces that he used to do for the Electric Company. Those little cartoons, now those songs weren't available for ages. They were on an Electric Company LP, I assume. And then finally, when Rhino did that compilation of all his stuff, they took three of those songs, I think, and put them on CD with the archive. So those were great to have, like Silent E and L.Y., and now you can even see on YouTube the old cartoons that those were put to. And there's a few of them, An Apostrophe T. What a wonderful children's songwriter he was. So go do Tom Lehrer, L-E-H-R-E-R, on YouTube, and you'll have a terrific time. But there's other things that I YouTubed that I want to recommend to you. For example, I'm a big fan of the cartoon series Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Now, they were in the news just 3 weeks ago because of that scare in Boston. They hired this marketing, young, hip, revolutionary marketing campaign, And what they did, of course, was they put up these throwy things. What were they called? Throwbies? Where they're magnetic lit-up signs, and they had one in with a shape on it of a character in Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Ignicknocked, one of the outer space rude aliens, who talks like this, because he's entitled to everything, and you're not. And he has his little companion, But anyway, so the marketing campaign took these things and put them on bridges without telling anybody, put them in cross-sections of highways and things like that, these magnetic signs with batteries taped onto them so they light up. And, of course, at some point, after they were up for 2 weeks in Boston and other cities, some workmen noticed it, thought it was a bomb because of the batteries, and obviously didn't know the character from Aqua Teen. And then Boston went into a panic for half a day, and the head of Cartoon Network had to step down because of this. Absolutely ridiculous. You know, I mean, yes, they should have had a better idea of contacting the city when they were going to put these things up, but really, it's just a sign. But Aqua Teen Hunger Force is hilarious. And they're into, like, their fifth or sixth season now. They're 15-minute cartoons all about, well, a three parts of a fast food group who live together. There's a master sheik who's a very egotistical, narcissistical sheik. And then there's Frylock, who's sort of the moral backbone and the leader, but he also has a dark side, and he's a bucket of french fries. And then, of course, there's the beloved Meatwad, he's not a meatball because he's uncooked and lumpy raw meat, so they call him Meatwad. And they live in New Jersey, and they live next to a fellow named Carl, who's hairy and bald and rather magnificently Jersey-esque. So that's the thing, and they get into very amazing and, you know, PG-13-rated adventures that, unfortunately, I haven't been able to see because my cable system, the tier that I have, does not carry Cartoon Network. But if you Google, if you YouTube ATHF, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, you can do the full Aqua Teen Hunger Force or ATHF and get a whole different list of things. But you can see about half a dozen to a dozen full, complete 12-minute cartoons just right there. So if you don't get them on cable, or if you've never tried them, or you have no idea what I'm even talking about with them, do yourself a favor. Go see them. In fact, the first one that I YouTubed was the episode called Hand Banana, which is one of the funniest things they've ever done. It's all about how Meatwad wants to get a dog. Well, they'll go and buy a dog or adopt one. They get this big old tub of radioactive goo and try to make a dog, but the dog comes out in a very bizarre and wonderful way, and then the dog becomes a real problem beyond even peeping and peeing and pooping in the yard. So look for Hand Banana specifically if you're looking for ATHF, although for some reason they've taken down the full 12-minute Hand Banana and have only a 7-minute clip of it. I don't know why. I hope they will put up the full one, but there's others on there. Go look for ATHF, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, on YouTube. And I am the Dave Lefkowitz on AM 1240 WGBB, and was just wondering what was going to happen, but yes, I do have relief here. So the gospel will be starting in a couple of minutes, which means that I can close the show now. It's, you've been listening, by the way, to Dave's Gone By Overtime, but want to take this time to thank the people who made this show real, real special. Special thanks, first of all, to my wonderful wife, Joyce, who not only is in my corner and supporting and loving me all the time, but she was really helpful today because, you know, just helping me prepare my show and reminding me and helping me with something I forgot that she emailed to me. So thank you so much, my love. Thank you, of course, to Richard Skipper and to Glenn for driving and, you know, your next car, get one of those direction thingies, where the woman calls out directions, might help a little bit. Anyway, but I'm so glad they made it, and it was just so much fun to have Richard, and Richard as Carol, and also Peter Fitzgerald in the studio on Dave's Gone By. Remember, you can listen to a vintage episode of Dave's Gone By Thursday and Saturday nights at 11 on Live365.com's DFSX radio channel. I've just been listening to Live 365 a lot when I'm not YouTubing, and they have all sorts of stations, hundreds of them, that you can listen to for free. And DFSX is one of them, and they play vintage Dave's Gone Bys Thursdays and Saturday nights at 11 p.m. Find out more at davesgoneby.org. I also want to thank Marty over at theaterpod.com, because now they not only have our our 100th episode live streaming all the time on there, but they have 24 or 25 different Dave's Gone By episodes that you can watch anytime you want at theaterpod.com, theaterpod.com. It's free. Again, just any one of 25 episodes. It tells you what they are, and you can listen and scroll back and forth. Thank you. Thank you so much. And give a listen. Tell me what you think. Write to me at davesgoneby@aol.com. Reminding everyone that you can listen to The Big Time. That's the show I do on WUSB out in Stony Brook. We just did one this past Friday morning. 3.5 hours of me talking to my wife. I don't think we even took any phone calls, but I played some vintage Dave's Gone By stuff on there, and I think we had a lot of fun. Go to davesgoneby.org, and it'll click right to the WUSB website where you can listen to. And our next episode, live of The Big Time, will be Friday, March 16th, and I think Jeff Goodman will be back, so he'll do that live with me. Okay, in the coming weeks, some amazing guests coming up. We've got Jay Jacobs, the author of a Tom Waits biography. We've got the crossword puzzle editor of Newsday, Stanley Newman, coming. We've got one of the detectives on whom Starsky and Hutch was based, Lou Talano. And I'm unbelievably excited about this, Joe Franklin is going to be on an episode of Dave's Gone By very, very soon. The one and only Joe Franklin, the greatest human being who ever, ever lived. Okay, shout out to Jeff in Thailand. See you soon. Come back, buddy. Need you for The Big Time. And we will be back next Sunday, March 11th, 2007, with a 211th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you a happy Purim. Don't let the parade pass you by and gone by.
Goodbye, 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 goodbye.
Don't try and stop me, Horace, please. Gonna see me anymore. But when you discover that your life is dreary, don't you come a knocking on my door, 'cause I'll be all dolled up and singing that song that says, you dog, I told you so. So wave your little hand and whisper so long, dearie. Dearie should have said so long ago. Because you treated me so rotten and rough, I've had enough of feeling low. So wave your little hand and whisper so long, dearie. Dearie should have said so long, so long ago. For I can hear that choo-choo calling me on to a fancy new address. Yes, I can hear that choo-choo calling me on board that happiness express. I'm gonna learn to dance and drink and smoke a cigarette. I'm going as far away from Yonkers as a girl can get. And on those cold winter nights, Horace, you can snuggle up to your cash register. It's a little lumpy, but it rings. Don't don't come a-knocking, I'll be all dolled up and singing that song that says your dog, I told you so. So, Horace, you will find your life a sad old story when you see your dolly shuffle off to glory. Oh, I should have said so long.